to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, coming to you again this week to talk about Formula One and as the season dwindles down. I know I've been whining about that for the last couple of weeks, but hey, it is what it is. Finally, here in the Pacific Northwest, we've had some very nice weather the past couple of days. I don't mind telling you guys that it has just been miserable here for the past week or 10 days, and I usually don't complain about the weather too much, but hey, when it takes 2.25 hours to get home from work on a drive that usually takes me 30 minutes, I think it's my right, definitely my prerogative to complain about it a little bit. But it's certainly been nice, a little bit chilly in the mornings, but nice and sunny, lovely fall weather, and really love it this time of year when we can get something quite nice. But boy, it was something the last couple of weeks. Kind of was almost intense and rainy, like it was back in Hockenheim, back in the middle of the summer. It was that kind of like level of rain, not very pleasant. Anyways, let's talk about Formula One. That's what we're here to talk about, of course. That's why we get together each and every week. And of course, leading up to the Mexican Grand Prix this weekend, there's lots and lots of news to talk about. We'll talk a little bit about the race itself. And well, the one thing we don't really need to look too far into, that is the Constructors' Championship, because that was wrapped up by Mercedes the other week at Suzuka at the Japanese Grand Prix. The Silver Arrows have more silverware, pun intended, with 612 points in the Constructors' Championship, way ahead of Ferrari of 433, Red Bull 323, and then a bunch of other people. McLaren Renault, fourth in the World Championship, with 111 points, which is, well, a very, very good season for them. They've been, I think, impressive in my mind all throughout the year, as they've slowly but surely this year, well, more than slowly, actually. I mean, after a number of years really wallowing in the depths of Formula One, they've made some substantial and concrete improvement this year, and it reflects nicely to see McLaren way up in the best of the rest, and hopefully we can see them progress into 2020 and beyond, and hopefully see them challenging for some podiums at some point, and maybe, dare we say, race victories. But they've got a long way to go before that. And of course, on the World Championship side, for the drivers, it is still Lewis Hamilton's championship to lose. Lewis on top with 338 points, Valtteri Bottas second with 274, Charles Leclerc third in the World Championship with 223, Max Verstappen and Sebastian Vettel 212 points each, Carlos Sainz 76 points, a point ahead of Pierre Gasly from Toro Rosso with 75, Alexander Albon, 64 points, Sergio Perez 37 points, and Lando Norris, the second McLaren driver, rounds out the top 10 in the Drivers' World Championship with 35 points. So there we go. It's going to be interesting this weekend. I think, obviously, like I say, it is Lewis Hamilton's championship to lose. And, of course, when it comes to the whole thing where, mathematically, Valtteri Bottas can still catch his teammate and beat him to the line and win the world championship, there would need to be so many freak and bizarre things happen to Lewis and have a run of bad luck that would be pretty much unprecedented in every walk of life. And, well, I mean, considering how good Mercedes have been over the years and just how good Lewis Hamilton has been over the years, he's not going to lose it now. It's just a foregone conclusion before he wraps up World Championship number 6. And it's just it's kind of interesting when you go back and think about a year ago, even as recently as the summer break of the 2018 season, when it was pretty much neck and neck between Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel, both then four-time world champions. Who was going to be the first to number 5? Was it going to be Lewis or was it going to be Seb? Ultimately, it was Lewis, and here we are a year later. And, well, I mean, it really was a question at the end of last year was how long or if he could catch Michael Schumacher in time for 7 world championships. And that looks like it is obviously a very, very realistic thing. I mean, it's amazing how it seemed to be still somewhat off in the distance, even as recently as a year ago. But obviously, when Lewis just finally seals the deal on the world championship this year, one more world championship to tie the great Michael Schumacher with 7, and who knows if Lewis decides to keep racing and still has a good car, sky's the limit. I mean, he literally could rewrite the record book. And at 34 years old, he obviously he has a number of years left in him. Question is, when will Lewis Hamilton decide to call it a day? But that's not a topic of a discussion today, because there's no signs or indication that Lewis himself wants to give it up. And why should he? I mean, when you've got that good of a car in the Mercedes, and they've delivered such a good car for their drivers over the past number of years, since 2014 at least, in this turbo hybrid V6 era, why would you want to go anywhere else? I mean, Ferrari, they're starting to show some signs of life, obviously, since the summer break. And, well, let's just say it's looking good for the Scuderia this weekend at the Mexican Grand Prix at Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez in Mexico City. Lots of straightaways, that thinner air in Mexico City. And, well, Lewis Hamilton himself said that he doesn't think they're going to be able to keep up with the Ferraris on the straights at the Mexican Grand Prix. So it could be one of those races where maybe Ferrari has another legitimate shot to win. So we'll talk about that as well in a little bit. But let's talk now. Let's start with Red Bull this week. And Max Verstappen, this is a story that was out on motorsport.com a couple of days ago. And he said that the Red Bull dynamic with Danny Ricciardo was what he called an ideal situation. And, well, I have to agree with him. I think that that they complemented each other very nicely. They never really came out and said who was the number one driver. I think it was obviously, even if it wasn't said publicly, that that it was Max's team. I mean, Max obviously has what it takes to be a world champion. I mean, the question seems to be with Max, not if, but when. And obviously, if he had a more competitive car, I mean, the Red Bull is no slouch. I mean, it's obviously a good car, but it's not really on the same level as the Ferraris all the time, although there have been certain times throughout this 2019 World Championship that they've been better. I mean, they really stepped up in that, I'd say, the second third of the season. Say the start of the European season is where they started to come into a little bit to their own. And, the Austrian Grand Prix, Max was better than everyone. The Mercedes and Ferraris both included in that one. But they've stumbled a little bit, but I think maybe that's not so much that they've struggled since the return of the Formula One after the summer break back in August. But I think that Ferrari finally managed to figure out how to get the SF90 working, and really how to generate heat, how to solve the problems they had with the downforce. And I think they've been able to recover ground and get back more on a level where they thought they should have been or expected to be at the beginning of the season. And Red Bull has just not been able to match them. So anyways, just talking about Max Verstappen and Danny Ricciardo, it really was a situation, I think, that they complemented each other well, because they are both obviously very good drivers. And even though, like I say, there was no clear number one, it was just it was obvious that Max, being the talent that he is, looks like he's destined to go on to greater things in Formula One. And that's not to take away anything from Danny Ricciardo. I actually like Danny Ricciardo a lot, and it's not just for the guy's personality and his character. I mean, he's one of the more colorful guys in the Formula One paddock, but also he's a very good driver. I mean, he's won a number of races over the years. He introduced the shoey to Formula One, and I thought that he was very good, and I thought he fit in very well at Red Bull. And I honestly can say, and I'm sure a lot of you will say that as well, that that it was a real shock going back to the summer of 2018 when Danny Ricciardo had decided to drop the bomb and say that he was going to be leaving and going over to Renault. And that obviously has turned out to be quite a bit of a disastrous first season with him at Renault. And we'll talk about that a little bit more, because Cyril Abiteboul, the team principal at Renault, had a little bit to say about that, saying that this has been one of the worst, or the worst and toughest season that he's had. And obviously there's a lot to back that up. But anyways, Max was saying that he wanted a teammate that he says can be in the the fight and push him to greater heights and really motivate him. And I think Danny Ricciardo was that kind of guy. I mean, he was a lot closer to Max than, say, Alex Albon or definitely Pierre Gasly. And I think that not to take anything away from Alexander Albon, I think that he's done very, very good since replacing Pierre Gasly a couple of months ago at Red Bull. I mean, Gasly always looked a little bit in over his head. I mean, he had his moments for sure last year at Toro Rosso, and with the departure of Ricciardo to go to Renault, I mean, it left them a little bit in a bit of a difficult situation. I mean, a lot of the other basically all the other seats and all the other drivers have been sorted out. They themselves were short on drivers that had enough points to get their super license, and it seemed like it. Well, it was basically when the music stopped, the musical chairs of drivers available, that Pierre Gasly looked like he could be a guy that could come in and do that job. And ultimately, he didn't or wasn't able to. So they decided to do something else. But Ricciardo was closer to him. And that, for me, was always the thing. I mean, together, Max and Danny Ricciardo were able to record a good number of points together. And I really think that had Pierre Gasly been able to deliver points more consistently, say, in the way that Alexander Albon has been able to do it over the past couple of months, that they would be much further up in the World Championship. And I think that they could be a lot closer to Ferrari, maybe even in front of them. But that's another discussion for another day. But Max went on to say, and I quote, "I think we had that ideal situation with Daniel. When I joined the team, I was, of course, more of a rookie, and he was already there for a few years. Then you can learn and build up nicely. At a certain point, it also became more difficult for him because we were very close together the whole time. In the end, this is also very important for the team. You also want someone who works in the same direction in terms of setup and wants the same things from the car. Then you can also develop the car much better. Then you can put the cars on different programs on a Friday if you can rely on both drivers to get the right information. These things are very important for me, but also for the team." And that's a good point, too. I mean, not only was Ricciardo getting the results, scoring the points, but being a more experienced driver, was able to give the engineers and the techs the feedback that they needed. And obviously, there'd be a lot of discussion with his teammate as well. So certainly, it's interesting to hear Max weigh in on that as well. Anyways, I just want to talk now a little bit about a new sponsor we have on the show. And today's episode of Scuderia F1 is being brought to you by the CBS Sports HQ. It's a brand new streaming sports news network app, and it's live 24/7 and costs you absolutely nothing. Yeah, I mean, you heard that right. It's sports coverage that's always on. It's always free. It's cool. I downloaded it. I've got it on my phone. I'm an iPhone user. It's so simple. I downloaded it, selected my favorite teams, went in there to the CBS Sports HQ section of the app, and the first thing that came up was British touring cars. Hey, I didn't even look for it. It was there. Hey, it's not Formula One, but it's motor racing. It's awesome, and I can never find British touring cars here in Canada, so I was pleasantly surprised that was the first thing available. Anyways, CBS Sports HQ is coverage that's always focused on the game. Tons of highlights, breaking news as it happens, fantasy advice, and something that we care about deeply here, gambling picks and analysis that get the extra edge. I know that when I turn on CBS Sports HQ, I'll see the tips and trends that I need to win my bets. And don't forget, you can access all this great coverage absolutely free. I don't mean for a week or a month, or if you have some really ridiculous special cable package. It's totally and completely free for everybody. You don't even need to get a login. It's so simple, and it's totally awesome. So just go to the App Store, download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Apple TV, Roku, Fire TV, or any other connected device at any time to watch CBS Sports HQ. So there's no fake debates, just sports for real sports fans at a great price of nothing. It's completely free. You don't even have to log in or sign up for anything. So download the CBS Sports app and watch CBS Sports HQ today. All right, going back to Red Bull, and well, they feel like they're building up some momentum for a stronger 2020. And, you know, I think that they have had a pretty decent year. I mean, it's been a little bit up, and I mean, there have been no real ups and huge peaks and valleys. I mean, they were good in the first third of the season. They've kind of cooled off over the past month or two, but I think that for a first year together with Honda, I think it's been very solid. I think it's been I think it's what they needed. They needed to start off, I think, on a solid footing. They didn't want to regress after moving away from Renault at the end of the last season. I mean, obviously, that was a long-term successful partnership that they had with Renault. okay, sure, it wasn't as good over the past several seasons in the turbo hybrid era, but still, they did manage to win a number of world championships together in the normally aspirated days, and they were still able to eke out some wins here or there. And, well, a Mexican Grand Prix last year, for example, was won by Max Verstappen and a Renault-powered Red Bull. So there you go. It wasn't really like it was that long ago. Anyways, they were able to keep it similar kind of results in their first year with Honda. And I think for them, obviously, the big thing was to be able to score some podiums, get some points. And obviously, Max has recorded a couple of wins for them. I mean, he thinks that the rest of the season, it's only going to be realistic to maybe target podiums. And I think that's a fair analysis and an assessment from Max. I mean, if you look at the resurgence of Ferrari over the past couple of months, and you look at the races that we have left on the calendar in Mexico, Brazil, the USA, and then finally Abu Dhabi, I don't really see any real clear-cut chances, let's put it that way, for Red Bull to sneak out another win. But hey, you never know. If we get another wet race, we all know how good Max is in the wet. I mean, obviously he won in Hockenheim. I mean, the big one, the one sort of coming of age, or the real statement race for Max in the wet was in Brazil a couple of years ago. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous how good he was in, around the wet track of Interlagos that day, passing people literally left, right, and center, and finding grip where he really had no business finding any grip when other guys couldn't even keep it on the track in, well, on the straight sections, let alone the corners or anywhere where you really needed some grip in those conditions. Anyways, like I say, I think that it's been a positive year with them. First year together with Honda, and well, I mean, can they build on that? I think so. And certainly Honda has come a very long way in a very short period of time. 2018 was a real year of development. I mean, the Toro Rosso really became like a test bed for the Honda engines. They were really able to accelerate that program and get it to the point where they are able to keep Red Bull on a par with Renault. But this is the difference, I think, right now, that that Red Bull and Honda have to set themselves apart from Renault themselves, not just as an engine manufacturer, but also as a works team. And they've stagnated, let's put it that way. So Red Bull and Honda don't want to get into that that same situation. And I think that they've learned a lot in a very short amount of time. And I think there's also synergy and there's good teamwork together. I mean, the car, the chassis, and the engine have more of a, there's more of an integrated design with the Honda and the Red Bull, whereas it was Red Bull and, you know, Renault would just supply an engine. Okay, you got to fit it in the back of your car. So Red Bull and Honda seem to work very good together. And well, I think that is just the basis of a very good working relationship. So we'll have to wait and see how they how they can build on this relationship and how they can move forward into 2020 and beyond. And of course, we'll have to see whether or not Honda decides to stay in Formula One. It sounds to me, what I've been looking into and reading over the past several weeks, that it's not a completely decided decision. But who knows? It would be sad to see them go, especially after this year where we've finally seen some concrete movement. We've seen them scoring points, and I think that's all positive. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. All right, well, sticking with Red Bull as we've done through the first quarter of the show this week, Christian Horner, the team principal at Red Bull Racing, says that Max Verstappen doesn't share the concerns that and frustrations about the current performance of the team, as his father, Jos Verstappen, Jos also a former Formula One driver. And, well, you know, I mean, they've cooled off, like I say, and Jos told Dutch television recently in an interview that he fears that that it could be another what he calls a lost year for Max in 2020 if change was not made. But you know, it's. That's the one thing for him to say. Obviously, he's going to be looking out for his son. He's going to be, I think, a lot more critical, a lot more biased. But according to Christian Horner, and I quote, he says, Max is a very different person to his father. He sees the bigger picture. He was in Sakura before the Japanese Grand Prix, and he has seen what is coming and the commitment of Honda to the development of the engine and to F1. In the factory, he sees what's going on, and I think racing dads, unfortunately, sometimes get it a bit excited. So that's kind of an interesting quote right there. But, you know, the big question that I have, and Max has to be the big commodity on the market, right? His contract with Red Bull expires at the end of the next year. And obviously, if you're Christian Horner, if you're Red Bull, you're going to want to keep this guy in your team. Like I was saying earlier in the show, Max Verstappen has everything that it takes to be a world champion. The only thing that he's lacking right now is a car that's an out-and-out downright contender. I mean, we've seen what this guy can do in what, obviously, it's not substandard. I mean, it's just not as good as the Ferrari or the Mercedes most of the time. But, you know, I mean, that's the amazing thing. I mean, if they were given all equal equipment, it would be really interesting to put Lewis Hamilton, Max Verstappen, Charles Leclerc, all the top drivers, put them all in the same equipment and see where they all come out. But anyways, I mean, that's a bit of wishful thinking. But, you know, I mean, Max obviously has what it takes, and you can see why his dad would make those comments that he fears like another lost season. But I mean, Max is still fairly young. I mean, it's not like he's 36 or 37 years old, and you know, he's kind of, well, let's just say he's like Nico Hulkenberg, a guy with talent but has never really had a decent car and hasn't had any success in Formula One, even though you know, he's got talent. I mean, obviously Max, I think, is a lot better than Nico Hulkenberg, but I think you might understand what I'm getting at here. Is as frustrating as it might be, I mean, I think, as Christian Horner says, if Max is looking at the bigger picture and he sees what's going on, there's a lot of room to be optimistic. But, I mean, the $64,000 question is that enough? Is that going to be attractive for Max to re-sign or sign a new deal to keep him with Red Bull after 2020 and into 2021 and beyond? Are Honda and Red Bull going to be able to deliver the goods? I mean, obviously, any design team that is led by Adrian Newey, you know it's going to be a good design. And the big question then is up to Honda. Are they going to be able to deliver on the power unit side of things? And I have to wonder, are the likes of Mercedes and or Ferrari going to drive like literally a dump truck load of money up to Max's house in an attempt to woo him away from Red Bull for 2021? But then again, would you really want that? I mean, both, I think, Sebastian Vettel and Valtteri Bottas, their contracts are up at the end of next year as well. And would they really want that dynamic in their team? Would Ferrari, with two young, obviously very talented drivers like Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc, would that be apples and apples, or would it be apples and oranges, or oil and water? Could that be the potential for a Lewis Hamilton, Nico Rosberg type relationship? I mean, would the two mix, or would they clash? Obviously, they've clashed on the track, and they've been a little bit, obviously the pun is intended. So, I mean, as rivals, they've certainly this year had quite a few moments of coming together and banging wheels on the track, and most recently just in Japan, just not even 2 weeks ago, when Charles smashed into Max at the beginning of the race, and Max was shortly done thereafter after losing over 25% of his downforce because his car was just so badly damaged. So could that work as teammates? It's questionable. Maybe it would, maybe it won't. Hard to say. But then again, would Mercedes want to take that on? Would they want, and are they in a position to obviously afford two huge contracts? I mean, they got Lewis Hamilton. You think that that Lewis can stay at Mercedes for however long that he wants, and it would basically be his choice as to when he wants to walk away from them and go somewhere else? Or I honestly couldn't see Lewis Hamilton going somewhere else, even if it was for the opportunity to drive for Ferrari. I mean, does he really need to do that with his career, or is Lewis more likely just to hang up his helmet at some point and say, well, you know what, I've done it all in Formula One, and now it's time to walk away and pursue other interests? Personally, I think that's what Lewis is going to do. I mean, he doesn't have anything left to do. I don't think he has anything left to prove by going to another team, even if it was Ferrari. But that's the thing. Would they want to, partner up Lewis and Max for a year or a couple of years with the ultimate aim of making Max the number one guy there? I mean, a couple of years ago, before Max signed with Red Bull and or with Toro Rosso, I mean, there was an opportunity for him to go to Mercedes, but more of a like a junior driver and a reserve driver kind of role. I mean, the way that that it worked out for him with Toro Rosso, and then you know, very shortly thereafter, after only a year and a couple of races, moves up to Red Bull proper, thanks to Danny Kvyat having a really bad start and a reckless start to the season, in which he crashed into Sebastian Vettel, unfortunately, a number of times, and that really messed him up. And you know, Max immediately made his presence felt by winning the Spanish Grand Prix back in 2016. So he I think he can get it done, and the question is where he will be doing it after 2020. I don't know. It'll be certainly news, massive news, whenever and wherever he decides to sign. Anyways, going back to what I was talking a little bit earlier, just looking ahead to the Mexican Grand Prix this weekend, and Lewis Hamilton says, and he's quite blunt and open about it, that they have no hope of beating Ferrari on the long Mexico or the long straightaways at the Mexican Grand Prix. And it sounds a little bit defeatist, but we've seen over the past couple of months, as Ferrari's been able to get their car sorted out, that okay, they have improved the cornering ability of the car. They've been able to find more grip and more downforce, and that obviously translated into a series of wins and a couple of they should have won the Russian Grand Prix. I mean, we don't really need to go over that. I mean, it was just unfortunate how the demise of one Ferrari compromised the other Ferrari's chance of winning the race. But last week or 2 weeks ago in Japan, even though Sebastian Vettel qualified on pole position, had that bit of a bobble in the jump start there, I think regardless, if he got away clean, I think that that was just going to be a Valtteri Bottas' race to win. I mean, he was clearly faster, and I don't think that any strategy or number of pit stops that they decided to do, factoring the overcuts or undercuts, I think that it was just Bottas' race to win. I mean, nonetheless, they've done pretty good over the past several races. But I mean, it has been quite apparent just the advantage that they have on the straightaways. Go back and look at Monza, also look at Spa, and over any of the past couple of races, also the long start finish straightaway at Suzuka, it has really played into Ferrari's hand and been advantageous. I mean, you kind of think, you know, had it gone a couple long laps longer in Belgium, maybe even Japan, could have turned out a little bit differently, the way that Mercedes were and Lewis Hamilton were closing in on Charles at different positions and different parts of the race. Could he have passed him for position on the track or ultimately for wins? I mean, it's a little bit academic, but it will be a huge advantage for them this weekend. And I don't know. I mean, there are some chicanes and some little quick flicks left and right on the track, but I mean, it's not really anything that has a lot of tight technical sections or anything like that. There's a couple of really decent long straightaways. I mean, that long start finish straightaway at Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez is massive. It's very, very long, and that is going to play into Ferrari's hands all day long. So you have to think that that is going to be a big advantage for them. And it is definitely, I think another race that they're going to be targeting a very solid finish, if not trying to get one of their cars or hoping to get one of their cars on the top step of the podium. But Lewis did go on to say that, and I quote, "I think for me, it's never been a case of wanting to rush things." He's talking about the World Championship. He said that Valtteri's driven well all year long. He's done a great job today and will most likely do a very solid job these next races. We'll have a battle. The fight continues. And Lewis goes on to say, "I think Mexico is generally our worst race of the year because of the way our car is set up, and it's going to be a tough one for us. The last few have been pretty shocking, even though we've won the title there." He's talking about Mexico. That's where he won it last year. "I'm hoping for a better weekend, but I think it's going to be very hard to beat the Ferraris with those long straights. We have no hopes of getting by on those straights, that's for sure. But even if you look at the others, the McLarens are picking up some serious speeds on the straights, so are the Red Bulls. So I think it will be a tricky one. I don't anticipate it will be Mexico. I think we will be battling for a good few races." And of course, he is referring to the battle that he's having with Valtteri Bottas for the World Championship. And it's interesting how he throws the McLarens into the mix, and they certainly have found some more speed, and they looked they've looked pretty good throughout the entire year, but over the past couple of races they've looked pretty good as well. So it's interesting how he threw Red Bull and McLaren into the mix there. I can't really imagine that they would be that far back and at such a disadvantage to say Ferraris and Red Bulls that they'd be stuck mixing up with the McLaren. So who knows? It is a bit of a different one. I mean, obviously, as we've said several times, this plays more into the hands of a Ferrari with the long straightaways, but you could see how it may affect things that if they're not up at the top of the running order as we usually expect to see them, but it could, if the points are a little bit less, then sure, it may mean that they're going to battle mathematically for a couple of races yet, but certainly I would not think that in the end of, by the time it's all said and done, that would really affect the World Championship and Lewis's designs on winning that title number six all that much. So obviously this weekend is the Mexican Grand Prix down in Mexico City, which means coming up very soon is the U.S. Grand Prix at the Circuit of Americas in Austin. And if you want to be there in person, make sure you've got your tickets for the race by going through Vivid Seats. They are a top source for tickets for the events that you want to go to: concerts, theater, sporting events of all shape and size and description you can think of. I typed it in a search in their app earlier tonight for the for Formula One tickets. First one that came up was a Canadian Grand Prix for 2020. So, hey, they got lots of stuff in there. Anyways, you can sort by the price or look for seats in the section row of your choice, all in the Vivid Seats app. To make things even better, Vivid Seats now has a loyalty program that allows fans to earn credit back, and that's called Vivid Seats Rewards. So go check that out. So go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Fans are automatically enrolled in the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program. Every purchase is backed 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater shows and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and join the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program today. Okay, when it is time to buy, make sure you enter in my promo code OVERTIME at checkout, and you can receive a discount up to $100. So please make sure you go and check out Vivid Seats, because if you support them, that reflects and helps support us here on the show, and it's just a circle of good. Goodness. So go and check them out, Vivid Seats, and go download the app and get in on that. All right, let's move on to Lewis Hamilton. We're just talking about Lewis Hamilton. Just going on a little bit more, he was talking about the advantage that Ferrari has on the straightaways and how that's really going to be a real disadvantage for Mercedes at the Mexican Grand Prix. But Lewis also went on to say that 2019 was not great for Mercedes engine development. And it seems a little bit ironic to see Lewis say that. I mean, you look at the amount of races that that Mercedes have won this year. I mean, they've won the last couple of races, and well, I mean, they've won the last two races in a row, but I mean, over the course of the entire season, I mean, they won, what was it, nine races in a row before they even were challenged by anyone else. I mean, they've been completely dominant. And so, I mean, it seems a little bit strange to hear Lewis say that. I mean, sorry, they won the first eight races out of the year, starting with Australia all the way up to the French Grand Prix. But then things started to change a little bit. I mean, you go to the Austrian Grand Prix, Red Bull and Max Verstappen, unbeatable combination that day. The British Grand Prix, Lewis wins again there. And, well, I mean, the German Grand Prix, I mean, that was a bit of an unusual one, obviously, because of the rain. But, I mean, still, Max won that one. And then since then, I mean, they've only won three races. I mean, most teams would, you know, they'd do anything to win three races after that. But, I mean, they won the Hungarian Grand Prix. Lewis won there. Then that's when we get to Ferrari winning three races in a row in Belgium, Italy, and Singapore. Bayreuth won in Russia. And then, I mean, the only one that was an out-and-out really convincing Mercedes win since the summer break, at any rate, by my books, by my logic, was the Japanese Grand Prix. And so, I mean, when you look at that, you know, at all the races that they have won this year, it seems a little bit counterintuitive to hear Lewis say that. And you got to look into the comments a little bit more. And Lewis says, and I quote, "We've got time for next year. I think it's not been a great year for us in terms of the great issue, in terms of our engine development. I think it's been a really hard time for the guys. They've been working as hard as ever, but it's just not as been successful in that department, as I say. Plus, it's quite draggy, but we've had great reliability, and hopefully that remains the same, and that's something that we can still be really proud of course. We have obviously still won the Constructors' Championship, but we'll try and push to try and maybe reduce the drag a little bit so we can increase the power for next year. They're fully on to it, and I have all the confidence in the world that we'll be able to make it some sort of step into it next season." And then he goes on to talk about Ferrari saying, quote, "It's incredible how quick they are. It makes it very, very difficult, even if you've got the advantage of the tire. But I think it's cool anyways. It provides interesting racing." So interesting to hear Lewis's thoughts behind that. And it just goes to show that no matter the success that that Mercedes have, is that no matter what happens, they still find reasons to, or areas that they can prove. I would not say that they're not satisfied. I mean, I think obviously winning, was it now six Constructors' Championships in a row, that you're going to be happy, you're going to be satisfied by that. But I just think it's an interesting little snippet, a little look inside the mentality that Mercedes have, that despite all the work that they do and all the success that they have racing in Formula One, that there's still areas that they can improve into it. And you just have to know that everybody, all the engineers, the designers that are working very, very hard behind the scenes to get you know, find the power that they need and make the improvements to the engine for 2021. So it'll be interesting. I mean, like Lewis said, that the way that Ferrari has improved since the summer certainly made for some more interesting racing. A little bit of a shame that that it took them that long to get the car figured out and really get some upgrades on there that really made a difference. And I mean, I don't want to take anything away. I don't want to make it sound like I'm hating on Mercedes, but it would have made for a more interesting season rather than them running out to such a huge advantage over those first eight races of the season. And I mean, by the time that Max actually won at the Red Bull Ring at the beginning of the summer, I mean, it was already pretty much a foregone conclusion that they were going to win the Constructors' Championship. And obviously by extension of that, one of the drivers, most likely Lewis Hamilton, was going to win the Drivers' World Championship. I mean, that was just the logical conclusion to make. And I don't want to take anything away from that. I mean, certainly they were better in the first half of the season where their rivals struggled, but it could have been a lot more interesting for a lot longer rather than, you know, Ferrari coming in after the summer break. And although they've been good, it's been more of, I don't know what you even want to call it, a little sort of almost like a byline, a secondary story to the season was, yeah, it was all Mercedes, but towards the end of the year, Ferrari managed to get their act together and became more competitive and more of a regular challenger to Mercedes. So honestly, I hope that whatever happens over the remaining four races of the year, that that they're able to build on that and move into 2020. And an ideal situation, obviously, would be a lot more parity and less distance between the likes of Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull. I mean, if you could even get McLaren moving up into that bracket as well, that would be wonderful. That seems like a bit of a stretch at the moment, but that's what I would really like to see, is a little bit more parity, more closeness between the top three teams. And you know, if you could have a combination of Bottas, Hamilton, Vettel, Leclerc, Max Verstappen, and to being a confirmed driver for 2020, I think that would be good for Formula One. And talking about McLaren now, that even though, well, actually, I got one thing to talk about before we even go there, but McLaren said that they've outlined their opposition to what they called the Japan-like Formula One weekend format. And I understand what they're getting at here, and it was a bit of an unusual situation, what with the typhoon and extreme weather really affecting, well, not just Formula One, it affected the Rugby World Cup, and by extension, a lot more things in Japan than just sports on that weekend. And, I mean, I didn't mind it. Obviously, it was kind of cool of a one-off thing. I mean, just because of the time difference, qualifying went at about 6 p.m. local time here on the west coast of Canada, and then followed up with the race proper at about 10 p.m. I mean, for a guy like me, you know, a family guy that doesn't really get the opportunity to go out very often on a Saturday night, you don't have to feel sorry for me. It's just the way it is. Anyways, joking aside, having the race at 10 p.m. on a Saturday, just absolutely ideal. I mean, if that was like that more often, it would be awesome to be able to watch races like that live. But anyways, I mean, the thing was having them back to back and just over the space of a few short hours in between the race and the qualifying session. It was cool for a one-off, but I didn't really want it to see it to stick around. And I mean, there have been a lot of discussions and a lot of things said about things that could be happening in terms of what they're going to do for qualifying formats for 2020 and beyond that. But team principal at McLaren, Andreas Seidel, said that he just doesn't think that it would be right for them to hold qualifying in the race on the same day. Even though there was quite a good response to it in Japan, I kind of like personally it spread over the course of an entire weekend. Now that we get more access and more coverage of the practice sessions as well in the days leading up to the race, it's cool and it's interesting to be able to follow along. And I personally like it. I think it breaks up my weekend nicely from a fan's point of view to be able to sit down usually on a Saturday morning, watch qualifying with my as I'm having breakfast, and then to watch the race itself on Sunday. We always tend to watch it on a Sunday evening if it's not live. I mean, we're lucky at this time of year. Like I say, I mean, we get with some of the Asian races come on, late evening, even, early into the wee hours of the night. And, in the case of the Mexican, U.S. and Canadian Grand Prix, those are right in the middle of the day, with the time difference. I mean, usually for Montreal on the West Coast, race starts at 2 p.m. whatever it is local time in Montreal, then it's 11 a.m. out here on the West Coast. That's perfect. Austin being down in Texas is only an hour or so ahead of us here, so again, that's perfect timing. Same thing with the Mexican Grand Prix. It's great to be able to do that, so I like it spread out rather than having to commit a whole chunk of time on one day. And then honestly, it just for the way that that my schedule works, and I'm sure I'm not the only one out here, that it just wouldn't be the same. I mean, I'd have to commit a lot more time, because I like to sit down and watch the qualifying. I like to watch the analysis. I like to hear all the commentary around it, all the punditry. From Sky Sports here up in Canada, so I enjoy all the coverage that goes with it. And I would honestly feel pressured to be able to sit down and take it all in. And just from that point of view, it would be too much of a time commitment for me. And just I would find probably I'd be fast forwarding it through on my DVR and missing out on stuff. So I wouldn't. I'm not in favor of it either. But ultimately, it's not up to me. Anyways, just talking about that, Formula One has also said that they're they're not going to go through with the attempts to trial different race weekend formats in 2020, and you know, in specific, the reverse grid idea. And I wasn't really a big fan of that. I didn't really like that idea. And honestly, I like the knockout format they have now. I mean, the one that they had a couple of years ago that they trialed for a couple of weekends with that kind of like that rolling cutoff time, which just basically led guys to knowing that they weren't going to be out on the track and make the cutoff time. I mean, in principle, it was a good idea. In principle, I think that that there were some possibilities for it, but at the end of the day, it just really wasn't it wasn't right. It didn't work as good. And when they went back to the format that we've had, we have now with the top 10 shootout in Q3 that we've had for a good number of years now in Formula One, to me, that just works. I mean, obviously, as time goes on, you're getting less and less cars because you use 5 and 5 and you end up with 10 in the top 10 shootout. And for me, it works rather than having, say, an hour long session and cars just go out and whoever sets the fastest time in that qualifying session between, say, 1 and 2 p.m. gets the pole. I think it makes for more interesting TV, the way that they do it with the current format, because the cars usually get two hot laps each. And we've seen over time that that guys can get caught out, that contenders can get caught out a little bit, and they get put under a little bit of pressure. And Monza was a bit of a snafu, just because the car is all slowing down there at the end of Q3 there, and just trying to get track position kind of messed a lot of people up. But that seems to be more the exception rather than rule. We don't see that very often in that sort of situation like we saw at Monza in Q3. I mean, I don't recall anything happening like that, at least in recent memory. But having said that, I mean, I am open to other possibilities, ways to improve the format to qualify into the race weekend. I just don't want anything too gimmicky. And that whole reverse grid thing, that just seemed too gimmicky to me, because the way that it would work, and I understand like the logic behind it, but to me it's a little bit kind of like artificially mixing things up too much, and I just didn't like the idea of it. I mean, there was a lot of criticism that was leveled at them, at the FIA and Formula One even for suggesting that, and honestly, I'm glad that's kind of gone over like a bit of a lead balloon. Anyways, just one more thing we got to cover here on the show today, and well, it's that time of year again, guys. Basketball, football, baseball, hockey, and a lot more. October is the only month of the year that all major four sports are going on at the same time. So what better way to get into the game than by heading over to mybookie.ag? And well, if you want some odds on the race on Formula One this weekend, head on over to their website. They got some great previews and things like that going on. It's not just purely a betting site and where you can make a little bit of extra coin, but there's a lot of good of analysis and previews, like I say. Anyway, so we here at Overtime Media have teamed up with MyBookie this October to give you a great offer. So if you sign up now at mybookie.ag and use our promo code Overtime, they will match your first deposit. So again, use the promo code Overtime and new users will get their first deposit doubled. So mybookie.ag, you play, you win, you get paid. Okay, so we have a good number of things to cover. We're starting to run out of time a little bit here. So McLaren have said that their 2020 car concept change is not a real gamble. They're going to move away from, to a certain extent, for the concept that they've used for this year. And it's a real attempt by the team to make another big step, and they're going to make some concept tweaks for the new design, which is being led by James Key, who came over from Toro Rosso earlier this year. And it could open up some dangers of not making the some gains that they've hoped to. But team principal Andreas Seidel believes, and he's adamant that this is the right thing for the team to do. And he says, I quote, "I would say where we are right now, it is not a risk. It is an opportunity. Our target is clear. We want to make the next step. So hopefully we can jump somewhere in between where we are right now and the top teams. Would be the next great achievement as a team. I wouldn't call it radical, but with the gap we are having with the to the top cars with the same regulations, we try to make a decent step, which means some of the concept stuff on the car will change. At the moment, we don't see anything in terms of carryover parts that would make sense. The regulations are pretty much the same, so there's stuff you can carry over for next year, but it's not like we'll develop stuff for next year's car and bring it back on the track this year. So it will be interesting to see what they're doing. I mean, they're completely open to the concept changes for their 2020 design, but it's not going to be extremely revolutionary. So it'll be interesting to watch. I mean, I think it's interesting in the sense that despite the fact that they've had such a good season this year, a very solid season right from the very beginning. I mean, fourth in the Constructors' Championship, I think, really speaks for itself. That they are looking, they're not ruling anything out. Let's basically put it that way. And I think that is a very good mentality to have. And I think that they really need to embrace that. And obviously, I think that's what they're doing. And again, I think that that Zach Brown needs to be given some props for the work that he's done over the past couple of years. I mean, he's brought in a number of key people, and I really like the guys that the public side of the team that that you see now. I mean, I really like I like Andreas Seidel. I like the way that he comes across. I mean, he's the guy that was running the Porsche LMP1 project, and he just comes across as a guy that knows racing. He's to me, a very sort of cut and dry kind of guy, knows what he wants, and he's able to express that. James Key coming over from Toro Rosso, that obviously seems to be reaping dividends. I mean, you got Jill DeFerrin, the ex-IndyCar driver, as the sporting director or whatever his official title is. I mean, they just got some good, experienced people, and you know, that's ultimately what it takes. I mean, you've got to have the eye for the talent and get them in there and put the right people in the right jobs, and to see them move up to fourth in the World Championship. Still a bit of an arm's length behind the top three teams, but a couple of years ago, I mean, where they were then to where they are now is literally night and day, and I think it's very, very good to see where they are and where they're going for 2020. So good to see that they are not ruling things out. And then even this year, I mean, they're still bringing updates to the car, and they will do for the next couple of racers. Even so, even though they felt like the car's performance has left it in what they call a happy place. So, you know, they are 34 points ahead of Renault in the World Championship, although I'm going to have to check that now, because I'll get to this in just a moment. Renault has been ultimately disqualified. Both cars have been disqualified from that double points finish at the Japanese Grand Prix for being found in, what do you want to call that, in violation of the technical regulations for that automatic brake bias balancing system that they have on the car. So that's going to change things up. But anyways, I mean, even if it's a 34 or now even a little bit bigger because of that double disqualification for the Renaults, McLaren have just had a good year. I mean, it's been solid. I mean, it's and I think that really shows that this is a team that's serious in continuing to progress and still to do good things on the track by going out and doing or bringing upgrades this late in the season. I mean, a lot of teams, they get to a point where they just stop doing that, and they start putting all their resources into the to the design and into the car for the next season, and you know, they just don't think it's worth it after a certain point. So I think it's good to see. I mean, especially as Seidel was saying just in the previous article that I was covering there, that they're all completely open and to like the design concept for next year, and that it won't be anything completely revolutionary. But I mean, they're obviously testing things out, and it's real world feedback. I mean, they don't have to worry about getting the car into the wind tunnel or simulating it on the software that they have. I mean, they can try things now and see now what's going to work. I mean, especially if the regulations are going to change too much between this year and next year. I mean, the big quantum leap, the big difference is going to be 2021, and that's completely different. But it's like, I think a good place. I think it's an important place for them or mindset to be if they're going to be successful in Formula One, and I think ultimately they will slowly but surely close the gap to the big three teams. Anyways, we're going to finish up the show now talking about Renault. And the first story I want to cover is with team principal Cyril Abiteboul. And he says that 2019 has been by far the most difficult season. And it is not hard to argue with people who criticize the team and say that that they have lost the plot. I mean, Abiteboul really contradicts that and says that that the critics like that are wrong. But you know, it's hard to really agree with them. I mean, if you look at where the team is now compared to they were a couple of years ago, yes, they have made progress forward, but the progress has slowed down. It's stagnated, and I would even argue that that this year they're almost even regressed a little bit on last year. I mean, I expected that after they took over and bought out Lotus a couple of years ago that each year would be a year that they would build and improve upon, and that there would be you know, you could see that progression from year to year to year. And I would obviously, to say it's a flat line would be a little bit unfair and cruel. I mean, but I mean the progress forward has been slower than it needs to be, and I mean there's no disputing that. A team that has all the backing and the resources that Renault has, and all the what do you want to call it, the resources that they have at their fingertips, I would really expect a lot more from them. And you can see why Abiteboul is saying that it's been tough on them. I mean, obviously the pressure's getting to the guy, but at the same time, I mean, they really have to be doing more. So I mean, he's obviously feeling the heat. And Abiteboul told motorsport.com that the pressure is very high. It's and I quote, "It is a tough season, by far the most difficult season I have personally lived because of the level expectations. But I don't think we announced that, and I don't think we set it ourselves directly. We always said our target was P4, and clearly we are not there. But we are P5." So he's talking about the fourth and fifth spot in the Constructors' Championship. And I mean, they were fourth in the Constructors' Championship last year, but they haven't looked as really convincing and as consistent this year as they had last year. They just obviously, to me, have lacked something. They could have been a lot better more often. And Danny Ricciardo says that that Renault need to keep positivity after the ups and downs, and all the challenges that they've had. And I mean, they've qualified well in the races after the summer break, but you know, this double disqualification for the brake bias balancing system, that's another setback for them. And Ricciardo says, and I quote, "Certainly after qualifying, I was thinking same kind of crap." And this is what I'm talking about, referring to a Japanese Grand Prix. Anyways, "And we really can't get into a break with issues and whatever, but I feel like we got a result that we deserve. We got back-to-backs coming up, coming up now, some fun ones, so hopefully we get a string of points finishes and just get something for the team. We get up there, then we drop and kind of drop our heads, drop a bit. We're trying to get back up, so for everyone's sake, we just try to need and keep some positivity before the year is out." Anyways, well, it's going to be difficult for Renault because, like I said, this was breaking news today on Wednesday Renault was disqualified from the Japanese Grand Prix over this illegal braking aid that they have. And, well, this was a protest that was lodged by Racing Point right after the race. And the FIA stewards had a teleconference here on Wednesday to evaluate and discuss whether this brake bias adjustment system by that was used by Ricciardo and Hülkenberg was legal or not. And in the end, they believe that this was a secret system that was not in contravention of F1's technical regulations, but they felt it was a driver's aid. So that, of course, is not permitted. So ultimately, they were stripped of their sixth and ninth place finishes. So you can see why for a driver that is frustrating, and especially when it's been a season that it's up and down as it has been. And, you know, it's it's got to be tough, right? I mean, if you're a driver, all you're going to do is you're going to go out there and do your best to try and get the best result on a Sunday afternoon that you can that you can get. And then you have something like this happening. And as I was saying last week, because this story broke, well, I mean, it came up pretty much right after the Grand Prix, obviously. But as I was saying last week, when it comes to things like this, that it, to me at the time, sounded like they were playing a bit of a gray area. And ultimately, I think that the ruling from the FIA stewards believe that it's exactly that. I mean, the system itself was not a contravention of the technical regulations, but the fact that they classified it as a driver's aid. Like I was saying, it was a real gray area, and they were playing in the gray area. And it's a bit of a risk because, you know, you have one person take a look at the rules and see and interpret a potential loophole that they can exploit. And I guess that's, you know, if that loophole is there and you can exploit it, it's just like, how much do you try to push it to the point of that it's going to be too much and it's going to cost you something? And obviously, in this case, they pushed it a little bit too far because ultimately it was ruled as a driver's aid and then therefore is out. So that really does mess things up for Renault. But they have a couple more races to get it sorted out and get some more points. But not a good way to or a good thing to happen in a season that's been so up and down with more downs than ups that it has been. So anyway, so let's just very quickly now just finish off the show and just go over just some of the stats here for the Mexican Grand Prix. It goes this weekend, and just the track itself, some of the stats here for the Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez. And well, I lost my notes here. Where did they go? Here they go. Gosh, it's getting late here. Anyways, the circuit is 4.3 kilometers long. It's a 71-lap race. Total race distance of just a shade over 305 kilometers. Valtteri Bottas holds a lap record. He set that last year, and it's a 118.741. Last year, like I was saying earlier in the show, it was a Red Bull front row lockout. It was Danny Ricciardo on the pole, Max Verstappen lining up beside him. Then it was Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel on row two, and an all-finished third row of Valtteri Bottas and Kimi Raikkonen. By the time it was all said and done, at the end of the day, it was Max Verstappen coming home first to claim all 25 points. It was Sebastian Vettel finishing second, 17 seconds behind, and then Kimi Raikkonen rounding out the podium with the second Ferrari. And even then, I mean, we were talking earlier about Lewis Hamilton saying that that they're going to be really disadvantaged compared to the Red Bulls and especially the Ferraris last year. Fourth and fifth spot for Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas. Bottas actually getting lapped by Max Verstappen. Max lapped everybody up to and including Valtteri Bottas in fifth place last year. So a really an interesting situation, and what might happen on Saturday. Could you imagine Lewis Hamilton getting lapped? Gosh, you know, I just have a hard time picturing that one. But if the lap time is 1:38, and Lewis was a minute and 18 seconds behind, I mean, Lewis wasn't really all that far ahead of Max by the time it was all said and done. I mean, Max would have needed a good number of laps to still catch up and lap Lewis by the end of that one. But certainly, the Mercedes car is a long way behind, and even Vettel and Raikkonen were a fair distance behind Max Verstappen last year at the Mexican Grand Prix. Anyways, that's a good place to wrap it up there. Thank you again very much for downloading and listening to the show. Thank you for getting in touch, for the tweets, for the emails. Really appreciate it. Of course, if you want to support the show, best way to do it is share it with a friend. Share it with your brother, your sister, your dad, your mom, whoever you know that's also a Formula One fan. Ultimately, we're all Formula One fans here and love talking about it and sharing all the news and stories and my analysis and 2 cents for whatever it's worth each and every week. And of course, another way you can help us out here is go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your podcast from and leave us a nice rating and review, and we appreciate those all very much. Anyways, time for me to get out of here. Enjoy the Mexican Grand Prix this weekend, and we'll talk to you again very, very soon. Ciao for now.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 Podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.